Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Five o'clock hour. We got updates on Shedeur Sanders and his injury and the Browns quarterback situation, which has gotten kind of crazy here in the preseason. Got to have someone to play quarterback. That's coming up in a couple minutes. More on UNLV football. The opener's coming up next Saturday. UNLVtickets.com is where you can get your tickets. We'll also update you on home game number two, which is against UCLA. And they're hoping to get a massive turnout. Hopefully a few thousand people come up from L.A. to watch the Bruins and their new quarterback, Nico, from Tennessee, Iamalieva. And some Raider stuff coming up. And Arash Markazi, L.A. report, and he'll get into a little more of the potential death of pay-per-view. And if you're a sports fan, pay-per-view really was a bane of our existence. Nothing worse than buying a pay-per-view, boxing or MMA, and then having the fight card turn out to be just a freaking dud. I went out on a weird note there, because this is a weird show. I'm not even sure what I said on the air versus off the air. We were up against it. But I was mentioning UFC planning this card at the White House. Dana White says next 4th of July, that fight will be on CBS. Interesting, because we know CBS and Paramount just had a pretty public fight with Donald Trump where they caved. So it's interesting that that fight is on CBS. It also hit me, things hit me randomly, that CBS will be getting back into the fight game. And actually one of the worst things that's ever happened on TV when it comes to fighting also happened on CBS. I thought that was the case. I had to look it up during the break, but for folks who are older than me, you're going to remember this because I was a young tyke, but I remember it at the time. CBS did actually televise the Vegas fight in 1982 where Boom Boom Mancini fighting at 135 pounds in a WBA lightweight title fight against a South Korean, Dooku Kim. He actually, I don't want to put it this way, but Dooku, I was going to say he killed him. Dooku Kim actually got knocked out and never recovered. He died of brain injuries a couple days later, but he had been knocked out in the 14th round, collapsed shortly after the fight, and then passed away. And it was one of those moments where, you know, that scares the hell out of people. That's a terrible thing to have happen. That was one of the, it was an impetus to shorten fights because boxing matches used to be 15 rounds and oftentimes with smaller gloves. So more safety measures were put in. But, yeah, I didn't mean to, hey, CBS, welcome back to the fight game. Remember that fight you did back in 1982? But it should be mentioned that we were just talking about fighter pay. And, you know, I've always got this internal struggle. Like, I love boxing. I love MMA. But I really root for the fighters, and I want the fighters to do well. Now, making a lot of money often makes fighters unwilling to fight often as they get older and go into, you know, premium matchups. Boxing, I think, has suffered from that for 30 to 35 years. Is the solution giving them less money? They'll be more hungry. They will take more risk. I guess that would probably work. But then I also respect the fact that we see a fight like this back some 43 years ago, and it's no joke. When I see promoters rip on fighters or bang on them for being unwilling to fight, like, you do realize they are going in there and they are putting their lives on the line. I think the last time I used that was actually with Jerry Jones and Micah Parsons, which I thought was a real, you know, crap heel move by Jerry Jones getting on Micah Parsons for not playing all the games. Like, they are taking a risk. And in fighting, boxing or MMA, the risk is even higher. And the risk of long-term damage. We know long-term damage in football can be horrendous to the head. We've seen, you know, suicides post-NFL careers. We know what's happening with ALS. And, you know, boxing and MMA is a freaking dangerous game.
No, it's a super dangerous game. Every sport has its risks. Combat sports is most likely up there at the very top for the most riskiest sport you could be involved in. And I've always seen it, you know, as a fan of MMA specifically, I feel like the perfect kind of the perfect model for a star when he came to the UFC. Somebody whose career wasn't long, but it was exciting. You don't want these fighters. We want to see our favorite fighters fight as long as possible. But again, when you're in a sport like MMA, you don't want to be in that sport too long. It's called the fight game, and people are always talking about the fight game in ways of, you know, get in, get your money, and then get out. We all keep clamoring to see the return of a Conor McGregor. But, you know, all the pundits who talked about Conor and the reason he's no longer in the octagon and don't plan on, you know, aren't waiting around for him to return is because the man did what every fighter should strive to do, which was get in, get into the sport, get the money, set you and your family up for life, and then get out. Now he keeps teasing it, but yeah, no, man, you don't want to, we want to enjoy these fighters, but it can't be for too long of a time.
Yeah. Actually, Ronda Rousey did a pretty good job of it. I think she also faced her mortality in terms of her fight skill set that it just wasn't going to work. The other fighters were advancing too quickly. She made a lot of money, although she appears to be kind of mentally damaged from the psyche standpoint that she feels like she was done dirty in MMA and mistreated by the fans. But, you know, when you rise to a high level and you're everyone's hero and you want to be Miss Meanie in there and an intimidator, there's going to be a lot of people who want to root against you. And when you do lose, the fall is going to be pretty difficult. So I mentioned UNLV game coming up on the 23rd. So we are, what is it now, 11 days away. And final preparations are being made. Next week is game week. You know how things change. Griffin played college football. Camp to the first week is going to be a lot different because then you, for the most part, I think there's a little bit of prep for that first opponent before the final week. But for the most part, that's the install for that week. That's when you start really putting out the scout for Idaho State. And we had a chance to talk to, the media did, Akeem Davis, who's the cornerback coach. We played some audio in hour one. And by the way, if you want to see more of this UNLV stuff, you go up to YouTube, search Cofield & Company. There's a bunch of videos up there. We put them up on Facebook and Instagram and TikTok and especially on Twitter. But Akeem Davis, who's the cornerback's coach, and he's got this, you know, really deep room of transfers who are in from Power 4 conferences. Well, the wide receiver room is kind of the same thing. They have some holdover receivers in – now I have to look at the roster. I just blanked immediately there. D'Angelo Irvin is a holdover receiver. He's been here for 3 years. Caden McGee is going to be a sophomore. He was part of the Odom regime. RJ Jackson is still here. But most of the room is new, and it is a kind of a who's who of dudes who have played at a lot of big spots around the country in Power 4 spots. But anyway, here's Akeem Davis just talking about the daily challenges of his defensive backs having to go against this big, experienced, you know, wide receiver room that has had a lot of experience at the highest level and had catches there.
And that is a really good group of young men. I mean, they got speed, they got size, they got length, they got hands. They make us better each and every single day. And we catch hell covering those guys here at practice. But I guarantee you on Saturdays, I'm going to be thanking God that they're on our team.
Is there a guy in that room that's emerged as maybe more than you thought in the wide receivers?
Oh, man, I think all of those guys are coming along. When you watch those guys, man, I mean, when you go look at them, you got big number zero. That's a big target, man. I mean, in the red zone, as a possession receiver, he can go out and do it. You got D'Angelo Irvin in the slot that can run option routes and just kind of keep you honest on the back end. I mean, you got guy. I mean, that room, it's a stacked room, and it's led by a veteran coach that knows exactly what to do with them. And like I say, we catch hell during practice, but I'm going to be glad they're on my team on Saturday.
How did your guys do in the scrimmage, and were there more flags like scrimmage one?
I think my guys, they coming along. As I alluded earlier, they compete in each and every single snap. They know in the room the competition is the central theme. We're going to need all five or six of those guys to win this conference championship like we want to do. Everybody's going to have a big role, right? They're going to buy into their role. They bought into their role. And now they just got to be the best person that they can be and star in their role. And like I tell them, we don't compete to be a starter. We compete for reps. We compete for playing time. And all of them going to get the playing time that they need to set us up to be successful and go win.
Quarterbacks are going to be a very rich free agent market with NIL around. Offensive linemen are too. Although offensive linemen moving is not as easy as you think in terms of blending right in at the next spot, because it is not productive to have four or five new offensive linemen every year. You really want to have a unit together for 2 and 3 years and also have them backed up and replaced by guys who've been in the system for 2 and 3 years and have physically gotten stronger. But I do think wide receiver, because it is such a by nature individual position, and we talk about divas with the wide receivers and they want theirs. I think wide receiver is going to be crazy the next 5 years and maybe beyond that, where guys are moving all the time. If you are on the two line at one school, you can move laterally, you can move down to get playing time. Because you are dependent on the quarterback, you are dependent on the offense, you are dependent on the offensive coordinator, and sometimes if you don't get in with the OC or a head coach, or you know, you don't curry favor with the quarterback, you may be at a spot where you're pretty good, you're pretty good in practice, you just don't get playing time because there's only so many receivers that they're going to rotate in. So this group, I mean, it's crazy where these guys are all coming from. I mentioned D'Angelo Irvin and Katie McGee are back. Day-Day Reynolds is in from Florida and Pittsburgh. You're going to hear a real trend here. Coy Moore is in from LSU and Auburn and Western Kentucky. Jaden Bradley is actually a holdover as well. He was with UNLV last year. He was at Pitt and Charlotte. Tayshaun Lyons is in camp. He's a guy who started at Washington and then went to Utah. And it goes on and on. But you can see the talent out there. JoJo Earl is coming in from Alabama and TCU. He's been a little dinged up of late. Troy O'Meary is one of the guys they're expecting a lot out of, a big 6'5", 6'4", receiver who started at Texas, then Arizona State. And I think while people are listening and saying, oh, you know, that means, oh, they couldn't make it there, like, it's not easy as a wide receiver to, you know, be the one, the two, the three on a team. And there's need for wide receivers at all these, you know, different spots. So you're going to – I think you are going to see a lot of guys matriculate laterally and sometimes, you know, what you would perceive as down a level to get playing time and get catches.
Yeah. I mean, but I mean, could we also see a situation, like you said, these wide receivers, they're not dumb. They're going around, they're making sure if they're transferring, they're going to good spots with good quarterbacks.
Good offenses, too.
Good offenses as well.
I'm always amazed when coaches who traditionally can't recruit quarterbacks and also don't throw the ball a lot actually get, like, elite receivers. Right. I'll give you an example. Iowa, I think, finally moved into 2025 in the NIL era on the quarterback front because they went out and got an FCS quarterback who put up gigantic numbers. Now, I don't know if that means they're going to be throwing 33 times a game. I don't think that's Kirk Ferentz's nature. But I often wonder when receivers land at a place like that, like, where do you think you were going?
Right. They go to places, especially, I mean, imagine it, Steve.
You're, I mean, you might win.
You might win.
But a lot of receivers are like, hey, where are my, you know, whatever, 60 to 70, 80, 90 targets in a college football season? Well, it was never going to be at that spot.
Right. But, I mean, these guys are, again, they're, what, 19 to 22 years old, and especially in a situation where you're transferring over, sometimes these guys don't really take the time to really think about it that deep. Sometimes you, especially when you are, you know, regardless of your position, when you're in a position where you're transferring, you're going from one program to another, you are in, you know, purgatory. You don't know exactly where your opportunity is going to be. You don't know when you find that opportunity, what it's going to actually be once you get there. So these guys, you know, it's very hard to, even in this world of NIL and the transfer portal, you know, you go to a place, a lot of these guys are doing it because they just want to make sure that their name is on a roster. They don't care about, you know, the scheme. They don't care about the offense. They just care about making sure they are on a roster by the time football season comes around. So, I don't know. I think with receivers, especially if these guys are all moving around, we see a lot of early young guys going around and finding these good spots with great quarterbacks and great offenses. Maybe we could see a trend where receivers aren't really moving around all as much. And they learn from guys who go to places thinking it's going to be a great opportunity. And in turn, they don't really get the reps or the, you know, the production they thought they were going to get.
I'm not sure who's going to be the guy on this team. That's they have pretty good depth. Mm-hmm. So in terms of number one receiver, I think it's going to be spread pretty well. I also think they're going to be a heavier run team than people are expecting, but we can continue on that as we move into, you know, real official preview of this first game against Idaho State. I did want to mention UNLV-UCLA is a big target game for the Rebel Athletic Department. They want to get a massive crowd out there against a Big Ten team. And today they announced they're opening up the 300 section at Allegiant. 50-yard line in that 300 section, a little bit upstairs. Tickets as low as $55. And oftentimes, if you sat at the games, I'm very spoiled, I'm on the field. But if you're at the game sometimes, maybe more so with the Raiders, but because the stands are a little higher for UNLV. Sometimes you can sit downstairs at a lot of football stadiums, and the seats right close to the field are actually obstructed a little bit by the team. So they've got tickets upstairs, which means that they're selling a lot of tickets. 300 section is open. UNLVtickets.com. I did not get a chance, shame on me, and we're going to recap it tomorrow. I did not get a chance to watch Hard Knocks. I have to admit, and I think you will admit, that the Netflix show that covers the SEC, and it's based on last season, and they feature regular season games, has something that Hard Knocks can't give us, and that is actually meaningful football on the field moments. Because while Hard Knocks always features the guys who are fighting for jobs with on the field highlights, this reality show that recaps last year's SEC season on Netflix, you are seeing a recap of stuff that maybe you didn't know happened, like down on the field. There is something about it that actually makes it better in some ways than Hard Knocks.
100%, 100%. When we started these series as a company, as the on the show, that was my first takeaway, was recognizing like, oh, I actually really enjoy the SEC football doc on Netflix versus the first episode of Hard Knocks. And I think it's because I was trying not to, you know, bias it, being, you know, my first watch of them both. I feel like the reason I like SEC so much more is because we are getting an in-close look to college coaches. College football coaches are some of the most interesting positions and in sports in general, in my
opinion.
And
we actually don't get enough behind-the-scenes exposure of these guys who are, I mean, Frank, in the SEC, they are bigger than the governor.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, I often think many of them are embarrassing with their behavior.
Yeah, that's an understatement a little bit. But
so what have you seen? Like, who's struck a chord with you? Brian Kelly is... he's a strange guy.
Yeah.
He's a unique guy. I'm not saying he should be fired at LSU or he's a bad coach, but he has a different sort of personality. I feel like there's a lot of fakeness with him.
Yeah, yeah, I get that too a lot. But I honestly kind of knew a little bit about Brian Kelly before watching this docuseries. I think somebody who really stood out to me was actually Auburn's head coach, Hugh Freeze. There's a moment in, you know, spoiler, I guess, but there's a scene where he's sitting there talking with his team, and he's talking about, you know, apologizing to the seniors, saying, I'm sorry you guys aren't going to be around here long enough to see how we change this program and get Auburn back to where it needs to be. And then he goes on to read a text message from one of his seniors, and he basically is like reading out this conversation where he's telling the same thing to that senior, like, sorry you're not going to be here. You know, this program will get to where it needs to be. And then the senior, what he read back was something that really struck a chord with me. The senior writes back something like, you know, it's an honor to be able to sacrifice my career or sacrifice my years here at Auburn in order to, for the betterment of this program. I'm happy to be here during the dog days of this program so that it can reach the pinnacle. So like that really hit a chord with me, because we, you know, you got the NIL, you got the transfer portal. You got kids transferring all over the place, and a lot of people really criticizing hard college football.
Right.
But the thing is that the you know, romanticizing the sport, the things that made it people want to romanticize college football, and what makes them love it so much, they're still there.
That's one of the. I mean, I try to remind people that's one of the stories that gets buried. Every kid is not leaving. You know, year to year to different schools. There right. are a lot who want to stay with one program, went there for a coach, went there for the school, went there for a community. You don't have to stay. I don't think it's bad if you leave, but there are still plenty of kids who are, I don't like using the word loyal. They like that experience and they don't want to change things. And you went to multiple schools. It's not easy going to a new school and blending in with a new head coach, a new school community, new classes. Frankly, some schools are not as nice as others. The experience around the school is not as nice as others. But to each his own. And, you know, just like the rest of us, you can job hop, you know, a job every 3 years, or you can stay at one place forever. It doesn't mean you're good or bad in either case.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, that, again, I'm not saying guys who transfer from program to program, you know, looking for better opportunities are in the wrong. Do it, like you said, do what you got to do. To succeed. But it was nice to see that, you know, that thing that I loved about college football, the reverence for good programs, reverence for great coaches, and, you know, the idea of joining a program and being part of a great team or being part of the history of a program. The fact that there's still kids out there today playing that still view college football in that way fired me up completely after I watched that.
Did you watch Hard Knocks last night?
I did.
Okay, so we'll get on it tomorrow for the recap. James Cook extension is not part of that. Nope. I assume they put in, because this is like the kind of fluff you want in, and if you're the Bills, well, I don't know if the Bills want it, but Josh Allen wants it in. Josh Allen made a public case for James Cook, the running back, to get things done, which is what you do from a PR standpoint and a reality standpoint. You want to back your fellow players. James Cook, the running back, did sign a new deal. Actually got more than Kyron Williams, which I'm a little surprised by, but 30 mil guaranteed. I think Kyron Williams got 23 guaranteed. 4-year, $48 million deal. And, you know, keep in mind that the Bills had a lot of rushing touchdowns last year. Josh Allen is seen running in a bunch, but James Cook had 19 rushing touchdowns a year ago. Latest update on Shedeur Sanders. Does look like he's not going to play this Saturday, which sucks because that was one of the cool things about the preseason. He was going to go against the Philly Eagles. Suffered an oblique injury, which if he's not practicing tomorrow, which I think is a given, and he's going to miss some time, any outside hope that he was going to steal the starting quarterback job, I think, is gone. I mean, there is a little more time. I'm kind of thinking the college football clock, which is coming up next week and the week after. But those odds I mentioned offshore that Shedeur Sanders was 10-1 to win the starting quarterback job. Pickett was plus 180. Joe Flacco minus 145. I think Shedeur would be an incredibly long, long, long shot to get the starting quarterback job if he's going to miss practice for a good amount of time.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, this is bad news for everybody who's out here thinking that he has a shot at being the starter. I'm more of the camp of I want the best for Shedeur, but what I think Shedeur needs to focus on the most right now is clamp down that second string quarterback role. And I think him missing, yep. And I think he misses this game, missing this game against Philadelphia. It's not great, but hey, if Gabriel can go out there, we can actually see what he does. And if he has a bad performance,
I was kind of blown away today, and maybe it's part of the bit. And I try to take everyone serious and on their word on when they're talking about Shedeur Sanders, but there was talk today of confusion with Shedeur Sanders being number four on the depth chart even after last week, because PFF, in rating the rookie quarterback play in the preseason game number one, Shedeur was the number one rated. And it was said repeatedly, well, how can he be number four on the Browns depth chart? Because it was a preseason game. It doesn't matter in the big scheme. They've been watching him practice and work with receivers and work with the O-line. Not just now, but going back to mini camps, I'm sure their evaluation of Shedeur being the four is about where he should be. Now, the sucky part is I think he actually could have forced their hand by getting some playing time in the next two games, but that is not going to happen. Up next, we're going to go out to L.A., check in with Arash Markazi, who will try to give us some answers on what the heck is happening with the Dodgers. They got a game tonight. Otani's pitching. That one goes in about an hour and 10 minutes, but they are in a slide, and now they are looking up in the NL West. How about that?
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, let's bring in Arash Markazi. We got a lot of sports stuff to get to, but I know Arash is getting real active up on Threads, and one of the things, Arash, you've been seeing, you want to talk about this social media attack on Vegas, that Vegas is dead.
Listen, I mean, Vegas is struggling. The LVCVA will be the first to admit that. But you got people really going out of their way. I mean, there was this viral post on Real Las Vegas Locals, and I don't believe this is a local site, because if they are, they have no idea what they're doing. But they had a receipt from the Pepper Mill, and we all love the Pepper Mill. And it was breakfast for five, Steve, but they didn't order just, like, I don't know, regular stuff off the menu. I mean, they were ordering, you know, like the pancake combo, which comes with three eggs, two bacon, two sausage, three pancakes, French toast ambrosia, you know, eggs Benedict. So, like, each one of the items that they got was about $27.50. They got five cups of coffee, which are free refills. The staff at the Pepper Mill are amazing. So the final bill for those five amazing breakfasts, and again, I'm not talking something small here, right, was $150, like $153 before taxes and tip. Like, if you expect to come to Vegas and go to a Las Vegas Strip historical restaurant and get, like, French toast ambrosia and all you can drink coffee, and you want that for, like, $2.99, like, go somewhere else. By the way, there's a Denny's, like, next door if you want Moons Over Miami. Like, I am not saying Vegas is, like, killing it these days, but these, like, posts like this really, get me upset. Or like one of these, you know, the, and I don't want to call them out, but they're at the Bet Bash. And she's like walking through downtown Las Vegas and does like a 10-second clip of downtown Vegas on a Wednesday at like 10 a.m.
Oh,
like,
stop.
No, listen, there's like legitimate reasons to kind of say like, where does Vegas need to improve? I don't want to hear about your need for like a $2.99 breakfast combo. You could find that somewhere else. I'm sorry.
I did a staycation downtown. It was plenty busy all weekend. This past weekend, I was at Circa. I was at another place, and yeah, there are folks all over the place. I mean, it, actually, that's the worst example of place around Vegas to point out that might be struggling. Downtown's killing it. And but your point is, at 10 a.m. on a Wednesday, yeah, that might be one of the slower times. Who the hell's going to be there in the morning on a Wednesday? Okay, I want to get to Rams and Chargers real quick, then Dodgers. We got to get to UFC and the TV stuff. First of all, the Chargers are kind of – well, the Rams are beat up too with the Stafford situation, but the Chargers are beat up. They wound up having to cancel their scrimmage. They got the upcoming game at SoFi, but damn, man, the injuries on both sides, it's kind of depressing.
Yeah, I mean, the Stafford injury is the biggest one. Like, the Rams are across the board, and then you sign Rashawn Slater to this historic contract, and then he goes down. But the biggest problem is the Matthew Stafford thing, where he's throwing on Saturday, feeling good, paying three, throws about 68 passes, whatever, supposed to practice on Monday, doesn't practice on Tuesday. I was there today. He didn't practice. He didn't walk through, didn't do anything. Like, and so, yeah, the scrimmage that they were supposed to have today with the Chargers, that got canceled. The Rams, in lieu of that, will be driving to Carson to do a joint scrimmage with the New Orleans Saints. So we'll see how that goes. But, yeah, I mean, but both teams are hurt, but the Stafford one, I think, is the most concerning. I was told today that, like, listen, they're being cautious, and that he should be, if things are what they hope, like they believe he will start week one.
Rosh Markazi, Sporting Tribune, is with us. All right, the USC and their new deal with Paramount, very interesting. Paramount, not the biggest channel, but they've put up money here. You know, it's Paramount, CBS, Skydance, $7.7 billion. But what it does signal, I mean, pretty clearly, is the pay-per-view is probably gone for the most part forever. It kind of changes sports, and it changes combat sports.
It is amazing that this has happened in the span of a week with the WWE and ESPN and UFC and Paramount Plus. And, like, forget about the Paramount Plus component. That is significant. But that major UFC numbered formerly pay-per-views will now be on CBS. Again, if there's a UFC event that the casual fan were to care about, whether that's Jon Jones or Conor McGregor or whoever, I'm just saying that a UFC numbered pay-per-view that the average Joe would have cared about, those will be on CBS. I mean, so imagine being able to, like, you know, sit down on your couch, put it on whatever the CBS affiliate channel is by you, and watch that UFC. I mean, that is massive for the sport. But the price had just gone way too crazy, Steve. I mean, when you talk about $79.99, and, like, the story that we recently wrote at the Sporting Tribune is, like, the UFC is struggling to have quality pay-per-views. Like, there's a lot of big pay-per-views, quote-unquote big, that, again, casual fans, that's when you're going to get those big pay-per-view numbers, couldn't name you anyone on that card, and they were charging $79.99 to watch those cards.
Set the story straight on WWE going to ESPN. If I've got, like, ESPN through Hulu, if I've got ESPN through Disney, what is this new ESPN app, and what is my cost as a wrestling fan? Am I getting it with those other subscriptions? Because we keep seeing $30 for ESPN, but I don't think that's the case.
No. So if you already have ESPN, if you're currently watching and consuming ESPN through, again, whether it's DirecTV or a cable or Hulu or
YouTube Live.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't have to pay more for it. I mean, that's already part of it. So there's not an additional charge to that. The interesting part of that as well is that WWE had been live streaming their big, formerly known as pay-per-views, now premium live events. They had been putting those on Peacock. Not only will those be streaming on ESPN, much like UFC, the bigger events, the WrestleMania, big two-night WrestleMania at Allegiant Stadium in April 2026, that will be now on ESPN. Like, if you're sitting down on Saturday, Sunday, you don't got to turn on Peacock or you don't have to stream it, that will be on ESPN.
So TKO's parent company, WWE and UFC. UFC is leaving ESPN. WWE is coming in. I wonder what that means for coverage on ESPN, because we know they're, like, for the most part, when the NHL went bye-bye from ESPN, the NHL didn't get a lot of time on ESPN. You know, if you want to go do a local case, like, Mountain West made the decision 15 years ago, like, oh, we'll do it on our own. We don't need ESPN. That was it. Like, you don't get any exposure. I wonder if ESPN's just going to say, all right, well, with UFC, we're not going to cover it anymore. Not a whole lot, and not like we've had, we have been doing.
I think they are not going to go out of their way to cover them, right? So yeah. I think that those bigger cards on CBS, like if there's a White House card, obviously, if there's John Jones, McGregor, you go down the list of the transcendent stars of the sport. But yeah, I mean, they're not going to go out of their way to tell you the story about the two guys at the top of UFC 323 that you're not familiar with. I mean, those days are probably gone.
All right, set me up with the Dodgers here, because both you and Grant Mona, and you got called out by Justin Watkins, our legal insider, earlier, because he said, man, I keep hearing Arash over and over again the last couple of months, like, nothing to see here, nothing to worry about. Okay, well. Dodgers, what's going on here now? What's going on here? I just saw the other day Dave Roberts kind of snapping on Ohtani for a base running error. They're starting to feel the heat here. They're not playing well.
Yeah, 100%. By the way, those who don't normally tune into the Sporting Tribune today, and I'm not really even plugging the show because we had to have Grant do a solo show for a variety of reasons. He did something that you do, Steve, extremely well, like Colin Cowherd, Jim Rome. He did a solo show, and he vented for two straight segments about the Dodgers and their struggles. The fact of the matter is that this is not a blip on the radar. Grant and I both have tried to be as level-headed as we possibly can be. And the loss to the Angels on Tuesday night really set him over the edge. So highly recommended tuning into that. But again, Steve, they are 12-20 since July 4th. But even if you go back beyond that, since May 4th, they're 45-42. They were a 500 team since the beginning of May. Since May 4th, they were so, like, this team, which began the season, like, everyone was joking, like, 162-0. I mean, obviously, that was a joke. But, like, that would set the single-season mark in win total. Like, they are tied for the division lead. The Padres are in first place in the NL West for the first time since 2010. The Dodgers, a month ago, Steve, had a 9-game lead in the division, just to give you an idea of how much they have crapped the bed here. This is crazy. I've never, like, I did not think the Dodgers were capable of doing this.
I think I made a mistake last week. I got very excited looking to get one of these bobbleheads the Dodgers have put out. And I checked out the secondary market on some of the Ohtani bobbleheads, and most of the prices were like $85 to $100. I see the Kobe bobblehead, and I'm like, oh my God, that is awesome. What a collector's item. I know someone who would really love one of those. I make an offer of $200 to someone. Their first message back was like, I don't think I can get one. They messaged me back. They're like, I got one. I'm like, all right, I'm on the hook for $200.
But it's a beautiful bobblehead, though, Steve.
It is.
Like, you're never going to regret making a purchase at a price that you're comfortable with. Yeah. I tell people that all the time. Whether it's a car, whether it's a house, or whether that's a Kobe bobblehead, if it's something you like, you don't feel bad about it.
I love it. Are you migrating to Threads because of Elon? What's going on here? You just want to be up there?
There's a lot going on, Steve. Yeah, I mean, you could post a little bit more. It's not as toxic. It probably will be, by the way. I mean, there's probably no way
to
get around that.
It isn't right now. You're right. Honestly, Arash, you put up a schedule for the NBA Cup. Like, on Twitter, would that be like, who cares? You suck. Well, get this off. You're like, okay, I just want to put out information.
Well, so it was one of two things on X. It was either that or there was, like, some bot porn thing, like, replying to it. So it was just a little much. Again, I'm still on X. I haven't left, but I am more active on Threads now.
Man,
and,
I
again,
like this.
It's It's less toxic now. But again, I'm not saying that that's going to be the case forever. But
fingers crossed.
Yeah, we'll see. Exactly.
Last one. How was your conversation with Sabrina?
It was great. We are going to announce something. The Sporting Tribune is helping out the Wooden Award with their content coming up. And they have a big 50th anniversary this year. So it'll be the 50th anniversary of the John R. Wooden Award. And Sabrina won it twice, 2019 and 2020. So we caught up with her in New York. Sorry, caught up with her in Los Angeles. Again, they're in Vegas tonight to play the Aces. But yeah, just had a talk with her about her time in college, winning the John R. Wooden Award. So we'll have more to announce. I mean, I basically announced it here on the show. I broke the news here on the show. But we will be doing some content for the John R. Wooden Award.
TheSportingTribune.com. He is the CEO of the Sporting Tribune at Sporting Trib up on Twitter. And he's now up on Threads, Arash Markazi. Thank you, buddy. We'll talk to you.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
Aces basketball coming up here on ESPN Las Vegas following Cofield and Company. If you want to follow the show after the show lives on social media, up on Twitter, up on TikTok, post videos pretty much every day. A lot of UNLV content, football is up there right now, so go to YouTube and search Cofield and Company. Griffin's doing some great videos. Yesterday we did a little more of a deep dive on Geno middle finger gate. Double bird gate. Finger gate, I don't know. Up in Seattle as Paul Gutierrez joined us. I don't know what you're going to get into today. It's always very unpredictable. Do you have an idea? Basically, what I'm asking you, was there a decent 4 minutes on the show today, or was this an El Flopo?
First of all 3 hours, phenomenal.
Oh, just highly entertaining, yes.
I get to sit right here and enjoy it.
But the real reason I ask is when this show ends, I'm like, I have no idea what we talked about for 3 hours. I forget immediately. And then I have to go back and watch.
Oh, yeah. No. First of all, 3 hours, definitely worth listening to. But for the, you know, our little snippet we're going to be putting on social media, we did have a very good conversation with a lawyer today about the John Gruden situation.
That's a good point.
So, you know, definitely want to check that one out.
I thought Arash brought it there. I got really hyper with Arash. He's very excitable. And now that he's up on Threads, sort of amped because he is putting some good stuff up on Threads. I really like to follow the Vegas and LA scene. And I like that he brought up the constant barrage. Listen, I understand it's a means to an end. Like, I would like to see Vegas dial it back a little bit with some of the prices and get a little bit more customer friendly. But some of the complaints are just silly. And there are going to be times in Vegas, especially early morning, middays during the week, where you can go somewhere and the town is going to appear to be kind of dead. Thanks to all the guests today.